Hey there, welcome to this week's message from Real Life Ministries. We are so glad that you're here. We hope that this message will encourage and inspire you to walk closer with Jesus. Now sit back, relax, and let's dive into the Word together.
One of my favorite series that we've done in a long time, because you get to talk about who God is, and we get to talk about who God is. I like to talk about that. Who likes to talk about who God is? Super good. There's a lot of other things you could talk about. There's a lot of other things you could like to talk about. I think that none are anywhere close to the importance of who God is and who that is for you and what that means. So happy Independence Day weekend. You don't love freedom. Yes. Yeah, it's something that I think we can often overlook, but there has been many sacrifices made for us to be able to have the liberties that we have in this country. And so I hope you enjoy that well, are thankful for that. One of the things we do get to talk about in who God is the freedom that he brings, the sacrifice that he has given for you. And we get to live in a day and an age and a place to where we have an abundance of freedom that most people in the world don't experience. And so that'll be a little reminder for what it is that we're thankful for. And some people have memories of the cost of what freedom is, and those should not be thought through lightly. And so there's gratitude that needs to be shared for those that allow us the freedom that we have. I love the imagery of who our God is, because he gives us freedom as well. We can talk about that a little bit today. So we're going to dive in. I've got my Bible right here. I'd love to see if you have it today. I always like to ask that. If you have a phone or your Bible, mine's right here. I see one. Yes, it's great. If it's on your phone or in text, that's awesome. But we're going to dive into it and be all over it today. Before we do that, I want to give just a little bit of a reminder of what our hope is as a church and for why you sit in the seat that you sit in today. As Michael mentioned, we believe that God has designed every person to do life in relationship with other people, to be known and to know other people, to meet and carry and share each other's needs and burdens and abundances and resources, that human beings were created in the image of God to live life together. Sunday morning is about an hour and 11 minutes of each week. And so this is not the place where you do life together. This is the place where we get to meet and get connected and be encouraged and worship and share and learn about who God is. And that's part of this portion of our service, is for the invitation for you to dive into the Bible to see what's good and what's not and what you believe and what you don't. And that's your decision to decide what's true for you. My job is to just walk through it and talk about it, to point to what I believe is true, to share what we believe at this church is true about your life for it to do something in you. And so each time we get to have a sermon, that invitation is open. But our goal is to talk about what we believe is true from what we believe is truth, which is the Bible. And so we get to do that today. This series is very specific in talking about who God is. The first week, we talked about, yes, we're talking about who God is, but what this really is intended to be is also a mirror to which you get to look in to say, who are you? So you get to ask yourself, who I am, to yourself. Who are you? What's true for you? What do you care about? How do you live? How do you function? How do you handle difficulties? How do you handle victories? Who are you today? And in the text that we looked at, we see that your identity, should you choose to believe, is in who God is, and therefore who he says you are, and what life is and isn't, what is good and what's bad, what is helpful, what is hurtful. And so as we look into this series about who God is, it gives us the opportunity to decide who you are going to be and how you're going to be. And this week, and throughout this series, we're looking at what God says about who he is, how he is, what he is. And the whole purpose of this conversation is for you to be able to say, what does that mean for me today? Whether this is the first time you've ever been here, I'm glad you're here. I hope that God speaks to you today. I know that he has truth to share with you. Or you've been here more times than you can remember. Every opportunity that you walk in here is a chance for you to say, God, show me what's true. who am I today? You can get up and leave if you want, but otherwise you're going to be here for about 32 minutes, and you get a chance right now to really consider and make decisions on who you are and what you want your life to be. I hope that you do that today. I get super excited for that. I love this message for today because it's speaking directly about who God is. So with that, we're going to jump in. I'm going to do a little bit of a review because it's connected together. And then today we get to talk about the claim of where Jesus says that he is the door. The door. That's not as exciting as some of the other ones. Life and light and truth and resurrection. This one is the door. But man, I bet that God has an amazing truth today because I've seen it. We've talked about it. Life changer. Jesus talks about the door. In the text that we're going to look at, Jesus is making reference to how he is a shepherd and how he is the door. So we're pulling the door part out of it today. The shepherd portion we're going to talk about next week. So with that, let's do a little review. We started the series, week one, looking into the Bible in the Old Testament, which is the revelation of the first story, the narrative of God, to where God makes a declaration to his people about who he is. We see that God is the God of creation. God is the God of mankind, of us, of design, of purpose, of all things. This is who God is. And he makes himself known to a group of people. He starts with Adam and Eve, and then Adam and Eve have their offspring, and then the people of God come into practice, and God picks a partner in people, in Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and multiple generations. And we see that in the beginning of this conversation in this series that God has an encounter with a guy named Moses, a little bit into history. And in this specific instance, God's people are in captivity, they're in slavery into Egypt, and we see that God's desire is to set them free. God chooses a person named Moses to go in and have conversations, to dive into the middle of this crazy world that we live in and to represent God, to help lead his people to where God wants his people to be. And Moses has this engagement with God and he says, I really don't want to do that because I don't speak good. And God's like, I know, we all have our things. And Moses is like, but I'll go, I'll do it. And Moses says, who am I supposed to tell them that sent me? Who are you? What do I tell them? And this is where we see the first instance to where God says, tell them that I am. Tell them that I am, that I am, that I've always been, that I always will be. We looked into the specific language of the text, and in that culture and in that time, there was no actual word and articulation for something that is. It just is, because it is. And God makes that statement. I am that I am. I always will be. I always have been. You tell them that that's who I am. And then Moses starts this journey of revealing who God is to the generations of people and to God's work into practice. We jumped forward in that first week all the way into the New Testament. Years and years and years and centuries of history has gone past to where Jesus comes into the scene and he makes a declaration and he says, that I am, that's who I am. I'm not a new God. I'm not a new thing. I've always been. I am that. I am that I have been. The God of all of history, of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joshua and Moses and Adam and Eve and everybody that's been in history that everybody's talked about, that God, that's me. And Jesus makes that declaration. And what's the immediate response when Jesus makes that declaration? If you know what happens, what do? They didn't like that. It's not because they don't like God. It's because they were fully devoted to God. And they believed that there was none other than the only one I am ever. They were 100% into that. So when Jesus says, that's me, they're like, you can't say that. Jesus was starting to tell them that no, indeed, that is who he is. He is I am, which sets up the series. Now, the rest of the seven opportunities in John that we're going to look at, this is going to be the third instance, to where Jesus is describing what he is that shows that he's God. He's going to describe how he is to show that he's God. And our invitation as we go through this is to decide, do we think that that's true or not for us? What Jesus describes himself as gives us the ability to learn more about who God is. The more you decide who God is, the more you're going to discover who you are. Do you trust him? Do you not? Is it true? Is it not? Do you like it? Do you not? How do I function? What do I do? When, where, how? The entirety of my life should be based on what you think is true in life. Jesus says, he's the truth. This is what's true. We just get the chance to look at it or not. The second week, we saw the first example of where Jesus said, I am the bread of life. And he's using multiple instances to where he's telling stories of the generations of God's people, and he refers back to instances to say, you've heard this story, you've heard this truth, you've heard this passed on from generation, you saw what I've done, I'm that. So he says, I'm the bread of life. They talked about how Moses gave them manna when they had no food, and Jesus says, that's me, I'm that. Just like God provided sustenance and provision in bread, in food, and that you can trust in, that's me, is what Jesus said week two. Last week, he said how he's the light of the world, that he brings light and truth into darkness. He brings reality into a world that maybe we don't know. And he says in that very statement in the New Testament that the eyes are the lamp of our body, that if we have good eyes that see, we will bring light into our body, which is truth, purpose, and reality. But if we don't, then we remain in darkness. We don't know the truth. We don't know how to love. We don't know what the world is. We don't know how to function. And so he gives us the opportunity to decide, what do I see is true? But he makes the statement, I am light. He also makes the statement that light came into the world and that the world loved darkness more than light. Choice, choice, choice. Opportunity, opportunity, which leads us to this week. We're going to talk about how Jesus describes himself as a door. And we get to look at multiple stories in the Bible because he's always speaking back to something that has already occurred. What Jesus is saying to the people that he's saying it to in the time is he's referring back to very specific depth, reality, major instances in their world to where he says, I'm that. Today we get to go, what was he talking about? What did he mean by that? Because there's always, 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 and then always, so much more depth to what he's saying than what we may see on the front end. So today we get to look at that. We're going to be in Genesis and Exodus. We're going to jump into Revelation. We're going to look at, yes, the Gospel of John. And we're also going to look at Matthew, where Jesus is talking. So we're going to go to the front and the back and the middle, because the story of God is true from beginning to end. It's synonymous. It works together. It's not fragmented, at least what we believe. And so we get to look at what Jesus was talking about. And you get the invitation again today to go, what do I think about this? Is this who God is in my life? Is this who Jesus is in my life? For some of us today, you've never heard any of this. I hope that today you have eyes that see and you see who God is and make a decision in light of that. For some of us, man, we need to be reminded. For some of us, we need to be encouraged. But today, as we look into this, I believe that you can learn more about who God is by seeing what he says about himself. And in some way, because God is brilliant, he does it through the analogy of a door. You ready? Okay, so we're jumping in. We're going to look at John chapter 10. John chapter 10, the series is based on Jesus' self-claims in the Gospel of John. And again, this text is going to talk about Jesus as a shepherd and Jesus as a door. We're talking about shepherd next week. This week, we're talking about door. So we got to pull this piece out and then look at it through the rest of the text. Here we go. This is John chapter 10, verse 1 through 9. And as we're looking at this, the context is that Jesus is having a conversation with people that have been God's people forever. And again, these people, do they love God or do they hate God? They love God. They're dedicated to God. They want to serve God. They want to be about God, but they're just missing some pieces. You ever feel like that's you sometimes? I feel like that's me sometimes. I want to trust God. I want to love God. And I hang on to the things that I know. And then sometimes I find out that there's some pieces I need to change. And just like them, I don't like it. I don't like being wrong. Who likes being wrong? I don't like being wrong. I don't like being exposed. I don't like missing things. This is the context of people that love God. They want to represent God, but they've got some things that they're missing. So Jesus comes into their context and he's starting to tell them that he is God. So right away, they're like, you can't do that. You can't do that. There only is one God who ever has been. We know the story. We know his people. Like, we've seen this. You can't say that you're that. And that's the middle of where we find ourselves. Because if you choose to believe that Jesus is the God that he claims he is, the God of creation, that's some things you got to work out. So he's having this conversation with those folks, and he says this, truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. And we're going to look at what a sheepfold is here in a second, so hang with me. He says, but he who enters by, what is that? The door, yes, is the shepherd of the sheep. To him, the gatekeeper opens the door. It says, the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. When he has brought out all of his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. Verse 6, it says, this figure of speech that Jesus was using with them, but they didn't understand what he was saying, which happens multiple times, which is why Jesus invites us to look a little deeper. So, it says that they didn't understand, so Jesus again said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who have come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. Again, he makes a very black and white statement. I am the door. He finishes it out by saying, if anyone enters by me, he will be saved, and he will go in and out and find pasture. So I want to put a picture up here of what he's referring to in the time of which he's talking to them, which is a sheepfold or a sheep pen. This is what Jesus is talking about. Culturally at the time, they knew exactly what he was talking about was this. For us, that's not very normal. Not over here. We don't have that. Okay, so there's multiple versions of a sheepfold in context. This is one example to where you can see that there is one pen or sheepfold, and there's sheep in it. It's a stack of rocks, right? And so when he says, those that enter by jumping over the side of that or sneaking in through the back, what are they? They're thieves and robbers, because there's one door, there's one gate, and who sits in that gate? The shepherd does in this instance. In other examples of what Jesus is talking about, there's a pen, imagine it larger, and there's multiple flocks in the same pen. So not one shepherd with his sheep, but multiple flocks of sheep with multiple shepherds. So when he says, my sheep know my voice, the sheep that are his will follow him. If somebody else that's not that shepherd comes in and says, come with me, what do those sheep do? He says, they don't follow him. Jesus is saying those that have come before him are liars. Those that have claimed to be God before him are not those that he's talking about. But the shepherd's next week. We're going to talk about it next week. So Jesus says, and we can leave that up there. He says, I didn't quite get it, so he's moving on. He's adding depth to the conversation. And he says, I'm the door. And I love this picture because that shepherd, who Jesus is referring to as himself, is the literal what? Door. He's the door. And the door is what takes you in and out. Now the sheep, when they're in the fold, when they're in the pen, what do they do when they're in there? It's kind of a weird question. They love it. They rest. There's protection in the sheepfold. My shepherd sits at the door, protects me for who comes in and who comes out. They rest. They lay down. There's refuge. There's protection in the sheepfold. Do they always stay in there? No, they got to go out. What do they go out for? They go out like we do. Woo, going to dinner. Yeah. It's kind of fun and jokey, but very true. They go out of the fold because that's how they eat. That's how they live. That's where they go. Is it dangerous outside of the fold? Yep, absolutely. So there's a protective, supplying comfort that the shepherd provides when they're in the fold. But you can't live life in the fold. You got to go out. The shepherd says, I'm the way that goes in and out. So he's talking about the door. And that's what we're going to talk about for the rest of this. You got to come back next week because the rest of the shepherd is awesome. But we're going to talk about then, not now. Now is the door. I think the door is better. We'll see. Couple definitions, because I like definitions. This is going to help us. Jesus used a very specific word in the Greek when he says door. It matters. That word is connected to the Hebrew word, which has historically been used for the beginning of the story of God. And so we're going to look at exactly what that word is. And then we're going to do what I would always encourage you to do, to go, where has that word been used before? You could also say, where does that word get used later? And look into it, because those are always connected. Always, always, always connected. When Jesus makes this statement, he's absolutely, with very specific intentionality, connecting what he's saying back to what has already happened. So when he says that to the people that are literally there, they know what he's talking about. Today, there's a really good chance we don't. So we're going to look at it. because that's going to bring depth and meaning to what he's saying, and then you get to decide if that's true for you. Definition, the Greek word that Jesus uses when he says door is the word thura. That's really fun. You know what else that sounds like? Hoorah! Who likes to say hoorah? Okay, there's a meaning with that. It's a different message for another time, but it's through association. It matters. So let's say thura together. Ready? On three. One, two, three. Thura. It's the word door. And by definition, what it means, it's the word portal or entrance, the opening or the closure. It's both literal and figurative. So like a door, a way, a passageway, and then the actual objective door itself. That picture that we had up there, you don't need to put it back up there, but it's both. You see that? He's the physical door that sits in the gap, but then he's also metaphorically or literally the way in which you come in and out of. That's going to matter. That's the Greek word. The Hebrew word, which is the same in different parts of the text, is the word pethach. You get a chance, okay? The way in which you enunciate the original Hebrew language, which the Old Testament is written in, has a kind of a phlegm enunciation. Pethach. Ready? One, two, three. Pethach. Great. Scholars we are. Okay? Same word. That's the word that's used in the majority of the Old Testament. Okay? It means an opening, literally, the door, an entranceway, entering, or the gate. Both the New Testament Greek, the Old Testament Hebrew, both words mean figuratively and literally a door and or a gate. Take that word gate, put it in your pocket. It's going to come back. It will matter. And so we're going to look at the multiple instances through the story of God to go, what did Jesus mean when he said, I am the door? And what does that mean for us? We're going to look at three different examples that are descriptors of a door as we get to ask ourselves this question. The first one is going to be the door to you, or what we're going to call the door of decision. It doesn't say decision in your notes. If you're a notes person, you can write decision by the first one. The door of decision is the first one we're going to look at. The second one is what we're calling the door of deliverance. The door of deliverance. It's 4th of July weekend. Deliverance is from bondage and slavery to life, to freedom. I thought it was fitting. It's already in the text. The door of deliverance is the second one. And the third one we're going to look at is what we're calling the door of your day, or the door of every day. The door of your everydays is what we're going to look at. You ready? I'm excited. I get really excited, so I'm sorry. I hope that you get excited. I'm not sorry, actually. I'm sorry if I'm over-projecting. There's so much good stuff in this, you guys. So much good stuff. I hope you see it. Number one, talking about the door of you, or the door of your decisions. We're going to look at Genesis. This is Genesis chapter 4, verse 7 specifically. This is the story of Cain and Abel. The story of Cain and Abel comes after the story of Adam and Eve. God has created everything, and God says that everything he has created is good. Yes, stay with the story. Everything's good. What's very good is you. Jesus is in the beginning in all creation. So God says, everything's really good. I love it. You're the best part of it. Because I love you, I'm going to give you a decision to Adam and Eve. And Adam and Eve choose to not trust God, but instead trust in what they see, what they want, what they desire. They are deceived, and they choose to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil rather than the opportunity to have life. It's the foundational beginning story of the text. So we see that in every single one of us, we are Adam and Eve. We have the ability to choose between what God offers and what he doesn't. The very next story is the story of Cain and Abel. Cain and Abel are Adam and Eve's offspring. It says that they first have Cain, the elder, second, the brother Abel. Abel and Cain, one is a farmer, one is a shepherd. That's interesting. That's next week. One is a farmer, one is a shepherd. They both make an offering to God out of gratitude. It says the offering of Abel that God was pleased with, and the offering of Cain he was not. We don't know why. That's a different story, a different sermon. Excellent. Check that one out. But what we realize is that Cain before God, God says, hey, I think you can do better. God says to you, there's often times when I think you can do better. And so we find ourselves in this exact situation. Cain's made an offering to God. And this is what God and Cain's transaction looks like. Verse 7 of chapter 4 of Genesis. It says, if you do what is right, Cain, this is God talking to him, will you not be accepted? that word is translated, will it not go well? Will it not be good? If you do what's right, it gets good. It's fine. Everything's good. Like, that's true. It says, but if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. Its desire is to overtake you or to have you or to have its way with you, but you must control it. You must master it or you must rule over it. This is what God says to Cain. So here we find ourselves, the first instance to where we can see the word, what is it that we're talking about today? The door. Is that we find ourselves in a similar situation, I'm sure you've been there before, to where you have an interaction with God to where maybe there's hurt or pain or frustration or difficulty or challenge, or in this case, what appears to be anger or disagreement with whatever's happening for whatever reason between you and God. And what God tells you, which what he tells Cain, is that when you find yourself in a circumstance like this, there's the reality that you can make a decision. First door, the door of decision. And what he says is, when you find yourself in a spot where you're feeling this way or your circumstances are this way, let me tell you what's true, men and women, Cain and you today. Sin is crouching at your door. And it wants to destroy you. Wants to have its way with you. Wants to set you off course. Wants to deceive you like Adam and Eve. Wants to entice you to make a decision that is the opposite of what God has for you. But what he says is that it's crouching, it's waiting, it's lurking at your door. What God doesn't say is it's kicked your door down. What he doesn't say is that it's breaking out the windows, that it's a thief and a robber that's sneaking into your house. He says it's right there. And what decision can you make according to what God says? What can we do? What does he say we got to do? Give up? He says, it's right there. You see it. I know it. It's right there. Sin wants to have its way with you, but you must control it. You can control it. You get to make a decision. And this opportunity is what Jesus is referring to that God puts into place to say, there's a door of your life, of who you are, and opportunity and decision sits at it. This is a decision you get to make. Let's jump ahead to Revelation. And this whole series, this whole sermon, this whole passage are all going to build together. They come together at the end, and we're going to cheer because it's going to be amazing. So we're building the foundation right now. There's a door, which is your decision, and God says there's sin on one side of it. Revelation chapter 3, 19 and 20, Jesus is speaking through John as he's writing. He says, those who I love, I rebuke and I discipline, so be earnest and repent. He says, here I am. What's so good? Here I am. That's the series. Oh, so good. He says, I stand at the door and I knock. He says, those or anyone who hears my voice and what? Opens the door, I will come in and eat with that person and they with me. So again, at the end of the Bible, the beginning of the Bible, there's a door. At the end of the Bible, there's a door. Jesus is saying that I'm going to stand at that door because there's a door to your life, isn't there? We see it in multiple instances. There's this literal and metaphorical idea that there's doors in your lives. And Jesus says, I'm going to stand at that door, and what is he going to do? He's going to knock. And every single person will hear it, and every single person will open the door. Is that what it says? No, what does it say? It says, those that will have ears to hear it, those that, this is going to die on me.
Yep. Need a mic?
Those that hear it, right, are going to be the ones that are going to what?
Got it back.
Those that hear it are going to do what? They're going to open the door. Decision. If you hear it, you'll open the door. And what happens when we open the door? It's right here. It's right here. It's right here. What happens? He comes in. Those that knock, he will come in. And they will have a relationship. And there will be provision. And they will eat together. But what he doesn't say is, I will kick your door in. Just like sin does not kick your door in. What God is saying is that this concept of a door is that it's opportunity. It's the ability for us to recognize what's happening in our lives in the decision that you get to make that is afforded to you in who God is and what Jesus has done is that you get the chance to make a decision to choose sin or to choose Jesus. The first door that Jesus is starting to tell them who he is, tell us or tell you who he is that every single opportunity, as long as you're alive, is you have the ability to make a decision of what you do with what you have. And I love God's word because he gives both sides. We like to do the Jesus knocks and I answer and he comes in and everything's good. Christians! Nobody likes to do the one to where it's like, I think I've had it. And I'm angry at God because he said yes to them and not to me. And I don't understand. And you know what? I think that what I'm going to do is I'm going to be like Cain. I'm just going to go out and ruin it all. I'm going to succumb to sin and temptation and anger and in my emotion. I'm going to go murder someone. Because guess what, guys? That happens, doesn't it? God says the choice is yours. And what Jesus is going to tell us is that he is that opportunity. He's that door. That's the first one. The second one, the second door that we're going to look at through the text today, is what we're going to call the door of deliverance. This could be, depending on your belief where you sit today, the door of your deliverance. We're going to look at Exodus chapter 12. Exodus chapter 12. If we're going through our narrative, there's all of creation, there's Adam and Eve, there's Cain and Abel, and we see that they were going to be fruitful and multiply, which is God's command. And now the earth is full of God's people. And God reveals his truth and who he is to a multitude of people, generation to generation, to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob and to the patriarchs, those that have partnered with God, that trust God, that mess it up all the time, because they're just like us, but continue to be faithful, continue to make a decision to get up, to trust, to move ahead. This movement of God's people is happening. And we see that the reality of life happens and there's this challenge and struggle and difficulty and there's a famine in the land. And that provision that God said he is, they don't feel like it's true. So this entire group of God's people, they decide to not trust God in what he's going to provide them. And they head off to Egypt. Because Egypt is the land of everything, resources. And they're like, we have to go there. So they go to Egypt and Egypt consumes them. And God's people find themselves in slavery in Egypt after years and years and years. And so now God's people that have trusted him are now in condemnation, in bondage, and in slavery under Pharaoh in Egypt, which is where we pick up our story here in Exodus. When we get to this point before Exodus happens in this story is where we started in week one, where God shows up to this guy named Moses. And he says, this is who I am. And Moses, I choose you. And I'm going to choose you to be a part of the deliverance of my people. And Moses is like, no thanks, because I don't speak well, and I don't know what to do. And by the way, I killed a guy once, and all these things that run through all of our minds. Hopefully it's not killing people, but right, there's a thing that we did that disqualifies us. And that's where God says, Moses, you tell him that I am. I am is who is sending you, and you are who you are when I'm with you. And so Moses is like, got it. So he goes and he shows up and God has a plan to deliver his people from slavery and bondage under Egypt because they love the world more than they loved him. They love darkness more than God. We make decisions sometimes to love that more than God. We are they. This happens. This is us, you guys. So they find themselves in this situation. And so God goes to Moses and he says, here's how this is going to work. Go to Pharaoh. And there's a back and forth and a back and forth and a back and forth. And we see that there's this thing called the 10 plagues that God puts into practice, which is a whole nother message for another time. And every single one of these plagues is attacking the gods that all these people believe in. And he's loosening the grip of Pharaoh, which gets us to the very last of these 10 plagues, the point of deliverance, to where the Passover happens, to where God is going to deliver his people to freedom. That is the best part of the story. And guess what's right smack dab in the middle of this story? A door. No way. I'm making this up. Exodus chapter 12, verse 21 to 23, it says that Moses, at the end of this series of events that we've talked about, summoned all the elders of Israel and said to them, go at once and select the animals for your families and slaughter the Passover lamb. Some of you are like, Passover lamb, blood of the lamb, Jesus is the lamb. Yep, 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 it's all right there. He says, take a bunch of hyssop, dip it into the blood in the basin and put some of the blood on the top and on both sides of the door frame. None of you shall go out of the door of your house until morning. When the Lord goes through the land to strike down the Egyptians, he will see the blood on the top and the sides of your doorframe, and he will pass over that doorway. And he will not permit the destroyer to enter your house and to strike you down. Then he says this, obey these instructions as a lasting ordinance for you and your descendants. Because when you enter the land that I've promised you, I do not want you to forget When I deliver you from where you are, I don't want you to forget. And here's where we find ourselves in the second opportunity to where Jesus says he is the door, is that if you were to talk to culturally the people at that time, the delivering part of what set them free from the bondage of their decisions and the slavery under the empire that they chose to trust more than God, the identifying marker of their life that they trusted in more than their lives themselves, was the blood of the Lamb on their doorpost that marked their homes, that they said, this is what I put my faith and my trust in. And God said, don't leave, don't walk through this door until you've put the blood of the Lamb on it, because that is what is going to set you free. And that's what they did. And those that placed the blood of the Lamb on their doors that said, this is who we trust in and this is what's going to change, they were set free. And it cost them, and it was risky, and it had been way too long, and there had been way too long of the promises and too many sucky things that have happened and so much unfairness and so many promises that didn't seem like it was going to happen for such a long time. In the instant to when God says, if you continue to trust me and this is how you identify yourself, you will be set free. Jesus says, I'm the door. The door is what stands between where you are and where you go. It's between where they were and where God was sending them. And the identifying marker for their lives was that their doorposts, their door, pointed to the blood of the Lamb and nothing else. If you were to go to your house right now, we're going to lighten it up a minute, breathe for a second. Okay. If you were to go to your house right now, what's your front door look like? What's on your front door? Anything? What do you got? Huh? Flowers? Who has flowers? Who has a wreath? Okay. Who has a really awesome sign? Okay. Does anybody have, you know, like a sports team logo or painted something different or whatever? We're just trying to think through right now, like, what's the entry into your home? Like, what's the identifier? What's the marker? Right? And some of these people, they're like, man, the thing that identifies me, the thing that is what my home represents, the thing that I trust in is, man, it's the blood of the Lamb. I don't really think any of us have blood on our doors right now. Probably not good if you do. But the fun, lighthearted, non-literal idea is, what is it that marks who you are? What's your home? What do you trust in? Okay, so Jesus says that he's the door of your decisions, that it's right there. He says that he's the door of deliverance, that what he provides and what he offers, should you choose to trust in it, will lead to something different than what you have. And the last one, as we look together, is what we're calling the door of your day, the door of every day. And so we're going to put another picture up here. And I've got a bunch of things in your notes. Take them with you. I'm not going to read through every part. But we talked that the definition of the door had two things. It was a door and it was what? Who put it in their pocket? Gate. Door and gate, door and gate. Those words are synonymous. Okay, so we're going to put the first picture up here. There's a thing in this time and culturally where Jesus was talking with his people that was called the city gates. Next picture, please. The city gates. Great. Perfect grainy picture. The city gates is the entirety of this picture. Okay, when you think door, you think gate, our front door. There's one singular door, usually for one person. Okay, the city gates, if you see in this picture right here, it still works. There's goats and sheep and shepherds and people, and there's walls, and you can see there's tents, and there's basins, and there's multiple things happening that are right outside the city. Tons and tons and tons of things that are happening. If you see the part of this picture that looks like a castle, kind of this first big brigade here, and there's some people standing on top of it. It looks like it's like 20 to 30 feet deep. There's multiple chambers inside of all of there. That also was referred to as the city gates. Okay, next picture, please. This is the same but different picture. You can see here that top line there, again, there's our city gate, that whole entire area. There's a courtyard of which all the things were going to be happening. That's the city gate. There's multiple entrances. The city gate is not what gets you into your backyard. It's this entire area. Does that make sense? And so again, Jesus says he is that. So hold on as we put it all together here this morning. Here's what happens at the city gates culturally at this time. Literally everything. The city gates, historically, if you were to go back and look through it, this is where all of the commerce took place. This is where everybody met. This is where your social life occurred. This is where the justices of each city, the judges, did what they did. This is where trials were heard. This is where the elders and the wise people, the believers in, this is where they sat. The city gates is where the king of that city or that place would sit and be put on display. This is where people would enter the city. This is where the highest level of security took place. This is where all of the poor and the needy and the widows and the hurt and the sick, they all gathered where? The city gates. This is where the prostitutes did their work. This is where the liars and the thieves and the swindlers stole from people. This is where people got attacked because the city is the sheepfold. And here's what you got to hear this morning. Just like there's an in and out of the city is the same thing that Jesus is saying about the in and out of the sheepfold. But what Jesus is telling them, that aha, the light bulb that goes on when we have eyes to see, is he says that throughout the history of the people that he's talking to, and if you went through and looked at the Bible stories, the story of Job, when Job references who he was, what status he had, the business that he owned, the people that he knew, guess where he was? City gates. When Boaz takes Ruth and says, I want her to be my wife. I have to present her in front of the people that would make it legal. I want to put it in front of the elders that are going to decide to know that I am who I am and that I'm going to take this person as my wife. Guess where that happened? City gates. When the widows and the poor that are helped, that God says, help them and be there. Guess where it happened? City gates. When people were put to death because of what they did, thieves put on crosses and killed those that are not believing cities. Guess where that happened? City gates. Your business, your known, your social life, all that stuff, city gate, city gate, city gate, city gate. This is where everything happened. And Jesus says, I am to be that for you. Today where you sit, what Jesus says, if you look at these three stories, is that I am to be that that is between you and the decisions that you make that can lead to life or a life of sin. When you have that temptation like Cain, that it's right there, Jesus says, I am the thing that can stand between you and that. You do not have to succumb to that. You do not let that take over. I can be that between you and that to give you life so that you can say no. Even if you've done it 1,000 times, Jesus comes to you and says, I can stand between that and you. You don't have to do this anymore. You don't have to make that decision anymore. Jesus wants to be the door between you and choosing sin. He wants to be the door that if you knock and you say, I need help, and God show me truth, he says, I'll open it and I'll be there and I'll be in relationship with you, what he says in Revelation. He wants to be the door to freedom from your life, just like in Exodus. The way, the pathway, the identity of your life to say the blood of the Lamb is on my life and this is how I go from bondage into freedom is through Jesus. And then the last one, none of us can get away from. Everything that you put your value in, your business, your identity. Who's the one that gives just right decisions in life? Jesus. Who's the one that meets the needs of the poor and the widows that are out there in the community that we're supposed to be in? Jesus. Who's the one that sits there at the gates that says, I am the king of the city that people know? It's Jesus. He says, all of those things is me. I'm losing my mind. Do you see the depth of what he's talking about? And he offers that to you. So that you don't have to find your identity in what you make and what you have and your decisions and what you've done. He says, I can change all that. Will you trust me? It's the story of Adam and Eve. It's the story of Cain and Abel. It's the story of people. It's the story of you. And Jesus says, I'm that. And man, if you're like me, I'm like, no way. That sounds like good news. Not some checkbox doctrine. Good news is that. And if you're like me, I'm like, tell me how. How do I have that? How do I do that? That's what the church is. That's what we are to be. Not people that meet at a building. Man, I'm stoked for a new building. I don't care. It's not what it's about. It's about people that are like, I want that. Help me find that. Help me say yes. That's why we meet. That's why we gather. That's why we do groups. And guess what? It's inconvenient and uncomfortable and awkward and they're not like me and I don't know. If you want life, you'll trust it. That's why we meet. Jesus says, would you be the priority? Would you let him be the priority in your life? If you will, you will find it. If not, then man, we get to jump back in and be like John where we're just those people that are like, I don't get who God is. And I'm not sure what you're saying. Man, you get to make a decision and that opportunity is there. I'm gonna read Matthew here as we end. few minutes over, but well worth it, I think. Jesus in Matthew is describing what he is as this gate and what it's like, this opportunity, this decision, this way, this life. And here's what he says in Matthew. He says, "Ask and it'll be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened." We've heard this. He says, "For everyone who asks receives, the one who seeks finds, and to the one who knocks the door will be opened. Which of you, if you have a son, asks for bread, gives him a stone, or if he asks for a fish, will give him a snake? If you, although you act evil like Cain, and you know how good gifts are your children, how much more would the Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him?" He says, "So in everything, do to others what you would have them undo to you," which sums up the law and the prophets. We've heard that before as well. Love God, love others. And then he says this. He says, "Enter through the narrow gate. For wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction. And many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow is the road that leads to life, and few find it." See, what Jesus is saying is he is the door. He is the gate. There is a way. He does provide. You can choose that you can be there, but it's not going to happen on accident. You're not going to stumble through the gate of life. You're not going to haphazardly find your way to what truth is. Jesus says, "It is there. I am that." And if you look around at the world, if you look around at the culture, most people will not find it. You have a part to play. But please hear what I'm saying today. You can make this decision. If you knock, he will answer. If you seek, you will find. And he will come and be in relationship. It is possible, but you have to see it. You have to hear it, and you have to want it. And here's what I love about it. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to have it all figured out. All you have to do is say yes to the one who already has. Jesus is the door. Is he yours?
We want to thank you for spending part of your day with us. Our mission at Real Life is to reach the world for Jesus one person at a time. If you'd like more info on the ministry or a giving opportunity, be sure to download the RLM app or visit us online at reallifeministries.com.